Ryan Dixon and Rory Boylan host Tape to Tape, the hockey podcast by Sportsnet.
Good job by Stamkos to win this battle and get this puck out. And I think he was favoring his right knee when he came up. A little bit of a twist right there, but he seemed to come off in quite a bit of discomfort. You can see him heading off to the locker room right now.
There's that slash. Everybody's taking an opportunity to slash Johnny Gaudreau tonight.
Welcome to Tape to Tape, T2T. I'm Ryan Dixon. I am a writer for Sportsnet magazine and Sportsnet.ca. Sitting to my left, he's just hoping to avoid the bite of the injury bug. It is Sportsnet senior producer on the digital side, Rory Boylan.
Nothing can stop me. I am really too excited that the Florida Panthers have acquired Michael Scarbosa.
Your lifelong dream come true. Give the backstory.
Going back, he was with the Barrie Colts 2008 to 2010.
Your hometown Colts.
My hometown, and went up to watch a game. Like, oh, this guy looks pretty good. And I went back to the office the next day, and I was talking to a coworker, writer at the Hockey News, Ryan Kennedy, and he's like, I saw that guy play too, and he was impressive. And so we both kind of followed him through his career, and hoping that, you know, I was hoping one of these days he can stick in the NHL, and he never really has, but now he's on the Panthers. So there we go. It's all come to this. I think I have to get a Scarbosa Florida Panthers jersey.
Oh man, I would pay you to go out and do that just to see how that thing fits. That's about all the Scarbosa talk you're ever going to hear on the Tape Today podcast. Don't worry, folks. We're going to talk about players you do care about, like Connor McDavid and Austin Matthews, kind of draw some parallels between what the Leafs and the Oilers are doing right in this very moment. Got some injuries going on in the NHL. We're going to touch on who might be most affected by some pretty big names going down. Certainly drop in quickly on some of the Olympic chatter. We're also going to talk to Arthur Staple of Newsday about what's going on with the stinky New York Islanders right now and what the long-term future might be for the team and for a certain superstar that they count on heavily each night, Johnny Tavares. And also talk a little early season, quarter season, I guess now we can almost say, surprises. Some almost. Things that have raised some eyebrows for better or worse. You can, of course, check out this podcast at sportsnet.ca. You can subscribe to it via iTunes. Follow Rory at Rory Boylan on the Twitter. I am at Dixon on Sports. Yeah, I mentioned the injuries. Steven Stamkos sounds like he'll be out for a bit with a knee injury, but by a bit, I mean most of the season, 4 months maybe.
Maybe.
Johnny Gaudreau, surgery as well there on his hand, maybe about a month-ish, and about a month as well for Taylor Hall.
And we had a bit of a scare with Matt Murray in the Pittsburgh-Washington game where he had to get pulled out after getting hit in the face with a stick, had to go through the concussion protocol. Looks like he'll be fine at least, but I mean, those three injuries you talked about are huge. Well, all at the same time.
Yeah, and poor Stamkos here. I mean, this is for a guy who was like an Iron Man before. That leg break, which I always feel compelled to point out, happened when he was back-checking like crazy against the Boston Bruins. And then, obviously, since then, the blood clots last year, now this knee injury. Just hate to see it to a guy, especially someone who was really getting it back together and kind of getting back to where we were used to seeing him in terms of the top of the scoring charts.
Yeah, that's it, right? We were wondering last year, in the final year of his contract, when it looked like he was going to leave Tampa, you know, how much do you actually want to put down on Steven Stamkos? Because he's not looking like the Steven Stamkos we know. There's something off here, and since he's signed and returned back to Tampa, it's probably not something, you know, he's not worrying about that contract, what he's going to do. There's not these questions when he's coming into a place like Toronto or Montreal or wherever about what he's going to do with his future. He's in Tampa. He's going to be there for 8 years, and he's going to be a leader on this team, and that's where he's going to be. So he doesn't need to think about all this stuff, and he can just go out and play hockey and do what he does. And he was looking great, 20 points in 17 games, and this guy really deserves some. I have to be careful with my words. He deserves a break. he deserves something good to fall his way because, I mean, we are seeing, you know, Sidney Crosby getting over the problems he's had, and now we're seeing what he can do when he's fully healthy and he's going on all gears. Tyler Seguin, when he's healthy, we can see what he's capable of. going nonstop.
Yeah,
I would like to see what you can get out of Steven Stamkos.
I want to see 82 games from Stammer again.
Yeah,
I mean,
wasn't there... There was a season a couple of years ago when he got off to a ridiculous start, and we were talking about can he do 50 goals in 50 games?
Might have been the leg year.
Right, okay. Was it that year?
Yeah.
So,
the Olympic year.
I mean, that's peak Stamkos. Yeah. To even be in a... He didn't really get close, and he probably was going to fall off and all this, but you want to see what... Like, can he do it? How far can he take this? What can we reasonably expect? He's 26 years old, so although we're not going to see an 82-game season out of him this year... He's still young enough that we probably have a few more years to get peak Stamkos and hopefully he can have something fall his way and this isn't something we're talking about every single year.
So is this the most devastating injury out of the ones that ran off? No, which one?
Tampa is easily the most.
They've proven they can absorb things.
Yeah, they'll get by this and, I mean, that's going to be ridiculous. The Tampa Bay is probably going to just coast through this regular season, finish probably second to the Montreal Canadiens in that division. And then they're going to add Stamkos back in towards the end of the year.
Back in March.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Yep. But, I mean, Johnny Gaudreau being taken out of that Calgary lineup is pretty devastating. They were already, they were struggling. I thought they were going to do much better. I think a lot of people thought they were going to do much better. And part of it is the goaltending has been sour. But part of it was because their offensive guys weren't scoring enough. And it looked like, I mean, in the game he got injured, he had a goal... I think he might have had an assist too, if I remember right. But he was starting to go. He was starting to show some signs, and then he gets injured, and now he's gone for a month. And that's a bit devastating. The good thing, if you want to take a silver lining here, is Sam Bennett got put on left wing on that first line in the game that Gaudreau missed, the first game he missed. And he looked pretty good. So maybe you're going to see something more out of Sam Bennett. He can find a little bit of a groove so that when Gaudreau does come back, Bennett feels a little bit better, a little bit more confident, and you can put him back to where he was, and he kind of just keeps going. Taylor Hall, obviously, though, that is obvious. That is a big miss for
a team that's doing well, yeah.
They have surprised a lot of people.
Save your surprise talk for the last segment.
Sure. 9-3-3, though, and this guy was scoring like crazy. This is the kind of player New Jersey hasn't really had in a long time, if ever.
Kovalchuk,
right?
Maybe?
Yeah, maybe. And this is the kind of weapon they needed. They have enough defense. Their goaltending is obviously stellar. They needed some kind of an offensive weapon, and Hall was the guy who gave them that. And now, you've had him for a month, and he's going to miss a month. So at least it's not longer than that. It could have been worse, I guess. But those two injuries are going to be far more impactful on those teams' fortunes than Stamkos on Tampa.
You mentioned Crosby quickly. The Pens got whacked recently by the Washington Capitals. Does that mean anything at this point, or... For Washington specifically, would you say just nothing matters until April?
Yeah. It means everything. Let's overreact. No, that's the November loss, right? I mean, Washington will take it anytime. I mean, there's a rivalry here. Pittsburgh always beats Washington when it matters most. So I guess it's nice to be able to beat them. And to be able to beat them like that, it's got to be a bit of a confidence booster and just a nice feather in your cap. But yeah, it doesn't mean anything. This Washington team is all about what happens in April and May and June, hopefully, for them. Because at this point, I think what happened with them last year is they were so good for the whole season. They were burned out by the time the playoffs came around.
Yeah.
You know, that could have been a factor. And so this year, you just kind of got to slow down a little bit and be okay with losing a couple and not winning that division and saving it up for the playoffs. I mean, Florida did the same thing. That's why they had to go out and get James Reimer, because they had burned out Roberto Luongo through the whole season. So they even had to look more towards the playoffs. But Washington is... in a far better position than them to actually contend for a Stanley Cup. So they have to be a little bit more careful with that. They don't really have, I mean, I would like for them to not rely on Holtby to play so many games this year, because he might get burned out. But yeah, this game doesn't really mean anything.
The rivalry there, of course, stemming from Crosby and Ovechkin, we've seen that on the international scene again, Crosby getting the better of Ovi on that stage as well. Lots of chatter about whether the NHLers will be in South Korea in 2018. I think I'm in the most populous camp that, is hopeful that there will be NHL players there, mm-hmm. that it's that the Olympics just has a little added bit of fairy dust on it, and it's really cool when they are there. I mean, we always kind of hear this chatter that, oh, maybe they won't go. It definitely was different this time, now looking like at least a little better. What's your take on what we might see. What do you want to see in
Well, first of all, I think they will go. It's too early to... I mean, these negotiations with the NHL always go down to the last minute, right? So we can't expect anything less. I think they will go. I remember a couple of years ago, I did an interview with Rene Fussell about Olympics and the Italy Olympics in 2006. He thought the NHL wasn't going to go. And at the 11th hour, they waited very late to decide they were going to go. And he was surprised by that. So it's way too early to say that they're not going to go. And there have been some signs at the meeting on Wednesday that, you know, they might be able to find a way to get this done. I agree that there is some... There's definitely some special moments when you get the NHLers in the games. Obviously, the Sidney Crosby golden goal was amazing. The TJ Oshie shootout was incredible.
TJ Sochi.
Yeah, yeah. You have these moments that are great. In South Korea, I mean, we're not going to see them in...
Well, I set your alarm.
I'm not going to set my alarm. Are you kidding me? Well, I work nights. I'm not going to be able to watch a 5 a.m. game.
Set your alarm to see Ovi play against Canada's junior team when the NHLers NHLers aren't going to go, but Ovi goes anyways.
This is what I want to see. I want to see the carnage of the NHL deciding they're not going to go and then the players deciding we're going anyway. And I want to see who does it. We know Ovi is probably going to do it. And not just because he said it. His owner has backed him and said if he wants to go, he'll go.
Ovi doesn't even say it like it's a big statement. He's like, yeah, I will be there.
Yeah.
I bet you he rallies some Russians.
I mean, you have a couple other, you have Kuznetsov on that team. The Washington Capitals could be in a lot of trouble for 2 weeks if a bunch of these guys decide to get up and go around the globe to play in the South Korea games. But that would be amazing to see who goes, how that whole situation plays out with the NHL and the owners, and then what kind of teams you get. I mean, you're going back to, I assume, a bunch of the KHL stars will go, Datsyuk, Kovalchuk, namely. And you're going back to, you might go back to a situation where you have this superpower Russia team and a bunch of...
Nigel Dawes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that would be kind of cool to see. Because
it would be
kind of
fun, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So, yeah, you do miss a little something. But at this point, I wouldn't be surprised. I understand it from the NHL and the owner's perspective of not wanting to let them go for nothing. And if the IOC it doesn't have any interest in contributing anything... I mean, how serious are they about wanting these guys there in the first place? Just go all in with your World Cup. Get rid of those Team North America, Team Europe.
Not having it, eh?
Junk and just kind of go all out with the World Cup. Do that right. And that's the event that you can own and really make good. It would stink if they didn't go to the Olympics, but I kind of want to see. I want to see the carnage.
All right. Lots of carnage in Toronto and Edmonton for a long time. Obviously, people feeling really good these days about where things could be going long term. But the Oilers, after a good start, scuffling a bit. Connor McDavid and Auston Matthews, take it for what it's worth, have gone a few games without bearing. Is there an obvious choice for you if I say one of these teams is ahead of the other? Or, you know, you can take this roster or that roster and try and win a cup in whatever you want to say, 3 or 4 years. I mean, Connor McDavid is a singular force. He is the player everyone would pick if you're factoring in age to start a team. So I guess even as good as Auston Matthews is, you give the Oilers a little advantage there, or maybe a big advantage, depending on what you think of Matthews, I suppose. But I guess my question is, what else? Yeah.
Yeah, it's closer than you think because Edmonton started so strong with a 7-2 in their first 9 games in October. And they have cooled down significantly, 2-5-1 so far in November. A lot more road games, so this is the first time they've really felt that kind of a challenge. And they've played a lot of good teams like the Kings and the Penguins. So you're kind of seeing what this team... You're seeing its warts. You're seeing that it's still got problems. You're seeing that it's still more like the Edmonton Oilers teams of last year and the year before than a brand new Oilers team that is going to suddenly break through and be this force in the Pacific and in the Western Conference. There's a lot of problems there. Which roster am I picking to move forward with? It's hard not to pick the Oilers just because of McDavid, but I think they're close because... The Maple Leafs have just as much young, exciting talent.
Who's got the better second best player? Because if the Leafs' second best player, long term, is Mitch Marner, Do you
and
think
I would even put Van Riemsdyk in there. Like, he's older. He's 27, but
right.
you're still looking 5 years.
Yeah.
I like him a lot.
Those guys are better than Dreisaitl.
Eberle's gone on a massive cold streak too yeah. himself. And, I mean, he was a guy who has been in trade rumor mills for a long time too. So and then you go back to the defense. Like, which defense is that much better?
Will you say Mike Van Ryan? You got always got the Panthers on the brain.
Yeah, really. I like Riley and Gardner lot more than.
Do you? I like Riley.
You don't like Gardner.
Yeah.
I like Gardner. I think the team has just been so stinky that you see a lot of problems with these guys that you might not otherwise see that they might be able to shield if the team around them is better. He's a fast skater and he can move
he's
the puck really well.
Yeah,
and that's what it's all about at the blue line these days. And that's really where Edmonton lacks. They still have a major shortfall with that kind of skill set. So I think I would have to lean towards the Maple Leafs blue line. And then in goal, definitely like Cam Talbot a lot. And Frederik Andersen has some proving to do in Toronto's crease, although he has picked it up significantly. But I don't think the difference between the two is that much. So what you're left with is these teams are pretty close to each other. And Edmonton's been going at this full-on blow-it-up rebuild for longer than the Leafs, although the Leafs have been pretty awful as well.
Yeah.
But which team is in a better position? If I had to pick a roster, I probably would still pick Edmonton, but I wouldn't feel good about it.
Yeah, it's not a slam dunk.
If you're factoring in the coaching, too, I would definitely pick Babcock over...
I mean, a McClellan is a Babcock disciple. He's a good coach as well, but Babcock's the godfather.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And they seem to have a smart front office.
Absolutely.
Edmonton's front office is... I mean, having Bob Nicholson there is an upgrade, but there's still some guys who have been around for those down years that they haven't replaced. You got to wonder if
that's the thing
back
is like
in
I feel like the Leafs are lucky in that they don't have any stink on them, despite how bad it's been, because it was such a break from the way they usually did business. It was such a sharp left turn to now we're doing this, mm-hmm. and I just feel like everyone was instantly on board and was like, yeah, so who cares about the 10 years where we never made the playoffs except once and then lost in catastrophic fashion, or even the decades of whatever. It was like so clearly a new era and everyone's been so on board with, let's do it this way. And the returns have been good too, right? Like really, when have things felt better around the Leafs? Whereas with Edmonton, still this like, oh my God, you know, there's still, I feel like they're just dragging around more baggage there still.
Yeah, and the difference here too, like when the Leafs lose like they did to the Pittsburgh Penguins on Saturday, you're reminded that this team has so much offensive talent. They're going to excite you on a number of nights, and they even put a good effort in that game. But in the third period, Sidney Crosby said, oh, I'm Sidney Crosby, I'm here, nice to meet you, and just took over the game, and the Penguins ended up running away with it. And you were reminded just how far the Leafs have to go. And you were reminded again when the Los Angeles Kings came in and destroyed them. When they actually play the top teams, you were reminded that they have a long way to go. Whereas Edmonton is expected at this point, I think their fans are more expecting them to hang with these guys to make a playoff push. Whereas the Leaf fans are like, they just want to see something and they're getting that and they're okay with these kind of losses. And next year might be the year where they're kind of expecting them to hang with these teams a little bit more.
You know what else Leaf fans talk about wanting to see? John Tavares signing with his hometown blue and white
in the
summer of 2018. We shall see. We, of course, just already lived this with Stamkos, but I will say there is definitely a difference in that. You know, with Stamkos, you're always like, well, why would he want to leave?
Yeah.
With Tavares, you can kind of see maybe there's some issues. So we're going to talk to Arthur Staple of Newsday about some of the issues facing those New York Islanders and whether they can find a way to climb out of the Eastern Conference basement. That is coming up on the next segment of Tape to Tape. On the line now, he covers the New York Islanders for Newsday. It is Arthur Staple. Arthur, how are you doing?
I'm good, Ryan. How are you?
Pretty good. There's not a whole lot to get excited about these days if you're an Islanders fan. Sitting at the bottom of the Eastern Conference right now, I guess there's a few places we could go with this, but just to start, goal scoring has been a real issue. What's been at the heart of that problem for the Isles?
You know, they made some big changes in the offseason, obviously. They let Kyle Okposo and Franz Nielsen, and as well as Matt Martin, walk out the door. Long-serving members of a team that had gone from being a laughingstock around the league to being one that was pretty respected, and those were two guys that were a big part of their offense and just a big part of their core. They brought in Andrew Ladd, who they thought could make up for the scoring on the top-line wing and on the top power play unit that they lost with Okposo. And really, they were looking internally for some upgrades, guys like Ryan Strome and Anders Lee, who had bad years last year, to rebound and kind of make up for the sneaky amount of offense that a guy like Nielsen provided. And really, none of it's happened. They've been waiting a few years for Ryan Strome to become a solid top six guy, and he's got 5 points, and he's been stuck there for a little while this season, so that's not really... they're not seeing it from him. Anders Lee, who had 25 goals as a rookie a couple of years ago, has one through 16 games, and his possession numbers are okay, but he's not really generating a whole lot offensively, and he's not on the top power play unit, which seems to limit his effectiveness. And obviously Andrew Ladd had goals in back-to-back games last week, but those were his first two as an Islander, and it took a long time for them to come, and he was clearly feeling the heat from the big 7-year contract he signed, and especially wanting to get off on a good foot. He really only had about a week of preseason time with John Tavares due to the World Cup, and that pairing was dissolved pretty quickly when Ladd started off very slowly, so he's not really worked his way back to that top line yet. And Jack Capuano has been scrambling, throwing his lines in the blender and seeing what he can come up with to try to find some offense, and really nothing's worked so far.
Were you surprised that P.A. Parenteau was waived and subsequently picked up by the Devils? I mean, it sort of seemed like something that made a little bit of sense. It was a low-risk, sensible deal. He'd had some success there before, and then he was, I mean, I think he had, you mentioned Tavares was at the World Cup. He had maybe a few days with him, and he was gone.
Yeah, it was a surprise. You know, I think when they went out the day after they brought in Ladd and Jason Chimera on July 1, and they knew they still had a hole left on that top line with Tavares, there were a couple guys that you could see out there that might fit, and the fact that it was a guy in Parenteau who had worked well with Tavares when Tavares was just starting his career out, it seemed like a smart move, very cost-effective, is a motivated guy, PA at 33 with a 1-year low-cost deal. You would have thought it was an ideal scenario, and whatever Parenteau doesn't give you maybe at the defensive end, that doesn't really matter if he can provide offense and kind of stabilize the right side, because they don't really have a lot of natural right wings on this roster. So, yeah, seeing him be waived the day before the season started was a shock. It's not shocking to see him be extra motivated and kind of helping round out a Devils team that suddenly is scoring some timely goals with him figuring in it. And the Islanders, I believe, 26th or 27th in the league on the power play. You know, P.A. Parenteau is a special teams dynamo and would certainly help them there. So it's got to be doubly frustrating for Islanders fans to have seen their longtime fan favorites go out the door. They bring in a guy who used to be here, who certainly would have had the motivation to produce and work well at John Tavares. He goes out the door to a local rival and is making them better, and the Islanders are suffering.
Speaking of suffering, you alluded to it earlier. I mean, for years, the Islanders were really having a rough go, and they've turned a corner the last few years, making the playoffs the last two, three of the last four, won a round last year. Obviously, again, the early returns are not great this year. Do you have a sense for what has to happen for this team to take another step forward? Because I think there's been a sense that it is a bit of an up-and-coming team. Yet, you could optimistically say perhaps it's flatlined and pessimistically worse than that. Is it about those young guys you talked about, the Stromes of the world, that just haven't developed the way they would have hoped by now? What needs to happen for them to go that next level from respectable team to maybe actual Eastern Conference contender?
You know, the way that they wanted to play was really the first, I'd say, 50 games of the 2014-15 season. They really stormed out of the gate really strongly. Offense, they were good. They got some big saves. They were defensively, they were a little unsound, but that was right on the heels of acquiring Nick Leddy and Johnny Boychuk. It suddenly turned an incredible liability on their defense core into something that was that opened, you know, raised some eyebrows around the league. And just the way that they played from one zone to the next generated a lot of shots, generated a lot of offense, and were able to make up for some defensive lapses that they'd had, the first 50 or so games of that season. And towards the end of that year, they lost a couple of guys. They lost Kyle Pozo to a serious eye injury. Mikhail Grabowski, who's kind of a forgotten guy now, had his first concussion with the Islanders, and he was lost. And really ever since then, even through last season's 100-point year, I think they got some very good goaltending from Thomas Greiss last year to help mask some of their deficiencies, and they won a ton of 2-1, 3-2 overtime shootout games that really, you know, some of those, when you win a lot of those games, it can cover up for a lot of things, and I think offensively they were still in that slippage area where they just weren't generating enough, didn't have the puck enough, were allowing a lot of chances and a lot of shots and really scrambling a bit in their own end. They've tried to change some of their transition game this year out of their own end, and they've had some decent continuity on the defensive side. But offensively it just seems like they're forwards, and it really, you know, it goes back, like I said, before they lost Nielsen and before they lost Pozo too. What kind of offensive, force can they be again after losing it, having it and losing it a couple of years ago? So I think there's, I don't know if it needs to be a systemic change. I know that Jack Capuano and his coaching staff have been the same for a very long time, and certainly that's a natural place to look when things are starting to get a little stale and go south. But something fundamental needs to change, especially up front with this team, whether it's, putting a couple wingers with John Tavares and sticking with them, whether it's getting scoring from the Ryan Stroms of the world, more consistent offensive play from guys like Brock Nelson, some of their new guys like Jason Chimera, and that vaunted fourth line that they had with Matt Martin and Casey Zizekas and Cal Clutterbuck. Zizekas and Clutterbuck are still pretty effective. Nikolai Kuhlman plays with them now. It's not generating quite as much and quite as much timely offense as they did the last couple years. So you look to a lot of different areas, but I think the forward group and just trying to be more of a possession team, they're down near the bottom of the league in terms of possession numbers, and that's a continuing ugly trend for them, like I said, from about February of 2015.
What can you tell us about the arena situation? We've heard so much about how through a year and a bit, it doesn't seem like it's been as smooth as they'd hoped for the move to Brooklyn. We've heard a bit about bad ice. Once in a while, you even hear a whisper that maybe they could move back to Long Island. Can you just give us an idea, how realistic that might be and what, what is most likely to happen with a permanent home?
Well, that is a big question that you've asked. The main obstacle to them going anywhere in the area is not just a lack of an arena. Nassau Coliseum, their old home, is being renovated, but it's being renovated by the people who run Barclays Center. So there's a lot of friction between the Islanders' ownership, even the new owners who've just taken over, and the Barclays Center people. There's a lot of things that the Islanders want fixed, that their players want fixed, that their fans want fixed, that the Brooklyn folks just don't see it being cost-effective enough to fix, whether it's changing the pipes in the ice-making system from plastic to steel, whether it's reducing the number of obstructed view seats. It's a soup-to-nuts sort of arrangement, and there's definitely a lot of friction there. So if there's friction between them now, I can't see where the Brooklyn folks would say, well, we hate you now, but why don't we have you come play in our other arena back on Long Island? So that option seems to be non-existent. I think John Ledecky and Scott Malkin, the two majority owners who took over this year, they're wealthy guys, they're patient guys. I think that's why they haven't really stepped in to say anything, whether it's about GM Garth Snow or Jack Capuano. They want to sit and assess and see what's happening and not make any rash moves. And I think that goes for trying to find a place to play. There's been talk of them exploring some property over by Citi Field where the Mets play in Queens, another borough of New York City. There's area by Belmont Park, which is just out over the Long Island border, the big racetrack out there. But these are things that are years away, and you still got to play somewhere until then. So I think the problems with the ice and with the arena and with the fans having to travel a distance that they were never used to traveling are going to persist at least for a few years. And I think it's two entities that haven't gotten along very well that need to work together because, as someone from the Islanders said to me, they get their money from Barclays Center, whether there's one person in the building or whether it's full. And you would think that that would make them want to work together to make it full since it really hasn't been so far this year.
One long-term issue that maybe doesn't feel actually that long-term or distant to some Isles fans is the pending unrestricted free agency of John Tavares. His contract will expire in July of 2018. Of course, here in Toronto, people talk about this in the context of maybe a hometown boy who may have some desire to come to a team that's presumably on the upswing. I mean, even just setting that aside, is it fair to say a lot of people around the team, involved with the team, probably have a little countdown clock in their head going, saying, you know, we've got to make this an appealing situation if we're going to have John signed, ideally, obviously, next summer? Is there already a bit of a sense of urgency around that situation and trying to avoid a scenario where he could perhaps look elsewhere if things aren't going well?
For sure. And I think it's foremost in everybody's mind in the organization that once they get to July 1, there may be, you know, if they continue on this path, there could be some changes in who's making the decisions next July 1. But even if there's not, rather even if there is, you know, Garth Snow knows that the future of this organization, much of it revolves around having a superstar like John Tavares in the fold. And, you know, John Tavares himself is not a guy who gives a lot away, but he signed pretty much the earliest he could, the current six-year deal that he had when his entry, you know, the year that his entry-level deal was expiring. He was very eager to get something done, and the Islanders were a lot worse off then than they are now. So, you know, he certainly endured some ups and downs, and they're back in a down period right now, and you would think that it would be all on the upswing. But he certainly says and acts like a guy who wants to see this all the way through, likes being in the relative anonymity of living on Long Island. He's not a big city guy, so, you know, you always wonder. Everybody, I assume, in Toronto thinks that all Toronto guys want to come home and play there, but I don't know if it's for everyone, and he may not be that kind of guy. But if they can get something done, you know, as early as they can, July 1st of next summer, and he's signed for 8 years, whether it's $10 million or maybe upwards of $11 million, you know, they've got a lot of money coming off the books after the 17-18 season to bring some players in around him. And I think, you know, as bad as they've been this year, there are still some promising signs, especially up front. They've got 19-year-olds Anthony Beauvillier and Matthew Barzal. Barzal went back to junior. Beauvillier's here pretty much for the year, it seems. Those guys are just rounding into shape. They've got Joshua Hosang and Michael Delcal, who are playing pretty well in their first pro seasons down in the AHL. So there's, you know, there's certainly hope there. The cupboard is definitely not bare, and he has owners that want to win and are willing to spend to do it. They're as close to the cap this year as they've ever been, you know, spending money. Even in the freewheeling pre-cap era, they were never a big spending team. So there are some things that that could appeal to him, and also just the self, you know, the self-motivation of being the guy that turns this franchise around permanently, I think motivated him 6 years ago when he signed, and I think it still motivates him.
Well, yeah, I have to say from an outside perspective, hopefully that happens, because I think the Islanders, one of those, you know, once great teams and still kind of a classic post-expansion team, great for the league, I think more fun when they are doing well. So maybe they will get it turned around with some of those young guys you just talked about. Arthur, thanks so much for joining us.
All right. Thanks, Ryan. Anytime.
That is Arthur Staple of Newsday. You can follow him at Stape, S-T-A-P-E, Newsday on Twitter. I feel like anytime the Islanders come up in conversation, you should be obliged to point out their unbelievable, awesome record, pro sports record. 19 consecutive playoff series wins for the Mike Bossy, Denny Potvin, Brian Trottier Islanders. So forget five in a row that the Canadiens won at the end of the 50s when you had to win two series to win the Stanley Cup. 19 consecutive. Could you imagine seeing
That's
your
wild.
Team win 19 playoff series in a row, 4x4 to win four cups, and then three more and losing to the Oilers in the final in 1984. That is mind-blowing.
What happened after that?
Then you pay for it. You get your comeuppance. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, do you think there's some rebound potential for the Islanders this year?
No.
It's tough, too, because you can get buried so quick.
Yeah. And it's just heartbreaking because this was a team on the rise. They looked like they had a lot going for them, and they do. I mean, they're not a lost team. They have good prospects coming.
Stable definitely mentioned some of those good young guys coming.
Sure. So it's not the end of the line or anything like that, but you just don't want to have to face a situation where you're backsliding and waiting on these guys for 1 or 2 years or 3 years, and then you're a good team again. This was a team that was almost there. They got past the Panthers last year. They were going to build on that if they could keep their UFAs, namely Kyle Okpozo, who that was a big loss, and then to replace him with what they did is just not, you know, it's not enough. It's also heartbreaking that John Tavares has to play with the wingers that he's gets played with sometimes. Like he's at times been out there with Jason Chimera and Shane Prince. I think he gets played with Ryan Strom and Josh Bailey a lot. I think Andrew Ladd a couple times, but you know, just the fact that he doesn't have anything consistent, that he doesn't have a really good, reliable scoring winger to play with, it kind of reminds you of Matt Sundin in his days with Maple Leafs, right? Like, what else could he have done?
What could he have done with Jonas Hoglund?
yeah, really. If you put him with a good winger for a couple of years, like, what could the Leafs have done? What could he have done? So you wonder that about John Tavares. And so to just see them go from what it looked like they were going to become to sliding into what they're doing this year. You have Philadelphia, who looks like they're now a team that's kind of on the up, I think.
Right.
The Rangers are, I'm still not a believer in the Rangers this year.
Well, let's jump in here then, because you mentioned the Rangers, and we're going to talk surprises here. You're not a believer, but they are definitely one of the surprises.
I'm a believer they'll make the playoffs.
Right, but 26 points after 17 games, you're surprised. Your eyebrow is up a little bit at how well they've done.
Yeah, they're one of those teams who we're not even a quarter of the way into the season yet. Their Corsi number is bottom five in the league. I mean, Henrik Lundqvist has been great for them. Their scoring has been
plus 34 goal differential.
And that's just it. Like, they're not going to score this many goals for the rest of the year. That's going to slow down. And you still are putting, you know, Mark Stahl and Dan Girardi out there for too many minutes. And it's just, it's going to catch up to them. And when you have Washington and Philadelphia and Pittsburgh just in your division alone, I mean, that division is looking tougher. And then you have Montreal and Tampa Bay, and now look at Ottawa. These other teams to contend within the Eastern Conference that you're going to have to face quite a bit. I just think at some point it's going to catch up to them. Not that I think they'll miss the playoffs. I think anytime you have Henrik Lundqvist, and they do have good depth up front. It's not like they're, you know, going to slip to be a bottom five offensive team, but I just think it's going to slow down some. They're still good enough to make the playoffs, but what they're doing right now is it's absurd. It's out of control. It's got to slow down.
Well, we already touched on earlier quickly the to complete the New York area scene, the surprising Devils in holding down a playoff spot. We'll see how they do in the absence of Taylor Hall. I mean, surprises obviously going both ways. I certainly think Nashville's flat record registers as a bit of a, I don't want to say shocker, but I had him in the cup final, so maybe I'll just go ahead and, all right.
Yes, that is a shocker.
Might as well stand by it for now. But yeah, it's surprising to see what's going on there. PK Subban, not an instant fit anyways.
Yeah, not yet. And I think Chris Mason was on the Fan 590 with Andrew Walker this week, and he was talking about, he's an analyst for the Predators right now, former goalie for the team. And he was talking about, Subban has to get used to his new teammates and the new style of play that the Predators play versus Montreal.
And so that's a whole new life, really, right?
And a whole new conference. And he was talking about how he made the switch from the West to the East. So he did the opposite of what Subban is doing in his day. He said just the style of play is different. He described it as the West is more of a, on a night-to-night basis, more of a playoff atmosphere, a physical, you know, all-out kind of game, whereas the East is a little bit more loose, a little bit more offensive, not quite as shut down, as
not
tough
life
on
and,
you.
Not life and death every night.
Yeah, and your travel is way worse in the Western Conference, too. So all these things, it's just going to take him time. I think he's got like a 0.5 point per game rate right now, minus 7, which, I hate the plus minus stat, but you look at it compared to the other players on his team, he's one of the worst. Has something to do with how many minutes he gets played, but they're not taking away his minutes or anything like that. So it's going to come. You have to figure that eventually this team is going to find itself because, again, there's too much talent. I mean, Philip Forsberg hasn't even really found himself yet. So I think it's all going to start coming together for that team eventually. I'm holding out.
Is it a surprise that Mark Scheifele is tied for the NHL scoring lead, or should we see that coming?
Tied for the scoring lead. I don't think we should have seen that coming. I think we should have seen a spike for him coming, though. We saw it towards the end of last year when Brian Little went down with an injury and Scheifele stepped into the number one center role, and he just took off, right? So we had to expect that he was going to do something this year. That looked like it was sustainable, what he was doing. And sure enough, he comes into this year, and you know, you have so many different than Tavares. You have so many different wingers that you can put with Scheifele on that lineup in Winnipeg, and that's a team that, you know, slow to the gate, but I think they're going to find themselves too. I mean, it's just
goaltending gets a little better.
Yep. I think they will have to do something about their goaltenders, and I think
should have done my trade for Trouba, Fleury, Mata. It was all there.
Why don't you call up Cheval Dayoff and give him the idea? I think a bunch of teams are waiting to see what Pittsburgh does with Fleury or Murray or whatever the heck they do, and then same thing, what's Tampa going to do? Although we were arguing that they should just stick with
Bishop. For it.
Yeah, could just go for it. But leading the league in scoring, I can't imagine he is going to keep that up for the full year, and because I don't think Patrick Laine is also going to keep up his scoring pace that he's on. But, yep, should have seen an uptick coming for Scheifele.
We should have seen an uptick in the amount of talent the Leafs had. Mm-hmm. We knew they were getting an injection, but I think it's safe to say it's a surprise just how well Mitch Marner, William Nylander, and Austin Matthews have done in their first season. I mean, Nylander was, I believe, Rookie of the Month in October. Marner's just about point a game. And Matthews, the goals are going to start coming for him because he's still getting all kinds of chances. I mean, I think there was obvious reasons to be excited about that trio, but man, it's you're in like couldn't have dreamt something better territory if you're a Leaf fan.
Yeah, it's right now it's almost best case scenario for this team. They weren't going to be winning a division or anything like that. You just didn't want to see Mitch Marner come out and look clearly too small for the NHL, right? Because then what are you left with? You have to put him back down in junior. There's no AHL option for him, and that would have been hard to do, to send him back to the AHL for another year where he would have been too good for that league. So for him to be doing what he's doing is, I mean, again, that's a guy who's going to slow down. He's not going to be a point-a-game player for the end of the year. What's the cap on these guys? Like, do they even reach 60 points? Do you think any of them reach 60 points?
Yeah, I do. That's a good number, I would say. But, yeah, because I would have said before the season, like, 45 to 55, and it looks more like 55 to 60.
Right, yeah.
And maybe beyond. Who knows? But, yeah.
Yeah, so right now it's going as good as you could have hoped for the Leafs. And they're going to have their terrible games, and that's totally fine, too. And they're going to have their amazing games, and you just kind of
hang on for the ride.
Yeah, enjoy it.
You are shocked by how bad Calgary's doing.
Ugh. Can I take back my preseason prediction that they would win the Pacific Division?
Not looking hot right now.
We never mention that again. Yeah. Brian Elliott, man, he has been such a disappointment. I did put up the red flag for Elliott was that the last time he was the number one goalie without a safety net, his numbers were very mediocre, below average. So we're kind of seeing that play out a little bit this year. I still think they find themselves. I still think he and the defense in front of him, the blue line in front of him, is too good to be this bad.
Yeah, I think so too. And it's strange with the Hamilton rumors.
Yeah.
We can tackle that another day, maybe.
I don't know how much to buy into those.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, again, like, if you're trading him now, you're trading him low.
Yeah, it just doesn't make sense.
So you might as well just ride it out. And you definitely have to ride out this Gaudreau injury and then let him get back and let him play for another month or two before. I mean, if the Calgary Flames do something, I think it's more around the trade deadline when you've let this team breathe for a while.
Sure.
But there's definitely pressure there to do something, and I think it'll come around a bit. That division is so bizarre this year.
Yeah, it is a little topsy-turvy.
There's opportunity. Do you believe in the Kings? I believe in the Sharks. Other than that, I mean, I feel pretty good about the Kings. Yeah. But when they're missing Jonathan Quick, and, you know, there's at least cause for concern that they're still the absolute best possession team in the league.
Yeah,
so nothing has changed there.
Still a beast.
And then
element.
This is a team, don't forget, that got into the playoffs as the eighth seed and then was amazing.
Yeah,
so.
Sure. Well, hard to believe anything could surprise two savvy, intelligent hockey vets like us, but that's what you get every year, the curveballs.
I think this is the first time I've ever been wrong about
prediction. Yeah, we have no tape to prove otherwise. Well, we'll have to hang in another few weeks and see what's the next thing to make us look dumb to talk about on this awesome podcast. That is all we have for you this week. Make sure you check us out, subscribe on iTunes, hit up sportsnet.ca. Rory is on Twitter at Rory Boylan. I am on Twitter at Dixon on Sports. And make sure you come back next time for more glass rattling hockey action on Tape to Tape.
He's a one who likes all our pretty songs and likes to sing home and likes to shoot his gun. Don't know what it means. Don't know what it means to love someone.